Hi, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Monica.
And we're two fangirls who like to talk about media and knit. This is our podcast, While We Were Knitting. This one, we watched three movies by the Wachowski sisters, The Matrix, Jupiter Ascending, and The Matrix Resurrection. The Matrix is the story of Neo. He begins to believe that the world around him isn't real. And The Matrix Resurrection returns to the same story years later when both Neo and Trinity have been presumed dead for decades. Jupiter Ascending came out between those two movies and is about an Earth girl discovering that she's a space princess. You know, other things happen, but like that's the headline. While watching these movies, I knit Witchy Socks by Dawn Henderson.
And I knit the Bennett Sister Shawl by Lindsay Fowler.
Ooh, that's a fun shawl name. I'll have to look that up. One of the things, Monica, that I also got very into this past basically month, and I know is of interest to you, is I got very into romance novels, and that is the lens through which I will be talking about these. And you are obviously a published romance novel author, not in English, but this does frustrate me sometimes when I'm like, there's two novels that Monica has written that I can never read because I'm sadly bilingual. It does feel like romances, especially the last, like Jupiter Ascending and The Matrix Resurrection, felt like romances to me.
Yes, I agree with that. Matrix Resurrection definitely felt like a lot more of a sort of less the trashy romance novel sort of genre and more of the like contemporary romance, etc. type of thing. Mm-hmm. But Jupiter Ascending, the whole like storyline was very much space opera trashy romance novel.
It's so great.
Like really, you could have taken some of those scenes right out of some of the books I read in high school.
I love that movie so much. When it came out in 2015, all of Tumblr lost their mind about it. And I was like, okay, I guess I have to go see this movie. And I went and I saw it and I was so happy. I was just shrieking with glee throughout the entire thing. And I've seen it three or four times since then. And every single time, the part where they're like, Sean Bean is like, the bees recognize royalty. I just like, so I'm just like burst out to laughter and glee and just start kicking my feet. And then the other part is when, what's his face? Eddie Redmayne, who's the eldest brother, is like doing his like, I create life and I destroy. What is this movie?
It's one of those where like the bad guys are so evil, yes, and the like, and the good people are so naive. It's like, oh yes, okay, I see what is going on here.
I love that movie so much. It is bananas. And it also has the really nice like destruction of Chicago, which I find very satisfying to watch. Like whenever you watch someplace that you live get destroyed in a movie, it's like, yes, good, burn it.
Well, so one thing that I didn't realize until like my most recent rewatch of the original Matrix is I didn't realize the original Matrix was set in Chicago.
No, like it's set in, I actually looked this up because I was like, is this in Chicago? It's set in like a composite city that's part Chicago, part New York, like whatever.
Got it.
Like there are definitely some things where I was like, oh, they're going into the loop, like the Chicago loop.
Right.
The answer to that.
Right. Or they're like, they have a, you know, they're going to meet under the Adams Street Bridge.
Yeah.
Or they're like Clark and Lake. And I was like, what? Wait a minute.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I know those streets. Yeah. Well, the Wachowski sisters were actually born in the Chicago suburbs. So that like all tracks and makes sense. But the subways in the Matrix are very much New York subways.
Oh yeah. No, that is not but even the Adams Street Bridge, I'm like, the Adams Street Bridge is over a river. there is no street underneath there.
Nope. I have to say, just like speaking of Chicago, I don't have a car in Chicago anymore, but I did for a while, and getting in and out of the underground portions of Lakeshore Drive by the river though is mm-hmm. a nightmare. Like every time.
Oh, yeah.
So tense. I was like, okay, what lane do I need to be in? Where am I going? How should I be turning? Full nightmare.
Yep Oh yes. Plus GPS doesn't work down there or anything. Yeah. Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's the worst. But that was a fun little tidbit that I really did enjoy. And then they go out to the suburbs where they meet the bees.
Oh my God. It really, you know, it's so funny. I watched that movie with an ex back in the day, and he probably was on Tumblr or something like that, and watching the collective of the Tumblr lose their minds. I don't know. But he was very excited to see it, and I was like, all right, I'll watch a fantasy space movie. And then we're both sitting there dumbfounded while this is going on. And I definitely remember a scene where I chirped him and I just looked at him, and he looked at me and was like, I didn't know, okay? I didn't know.
It's such a good movie. It's
I think it was meant to be played straight, but I'm not actually sure. I'm not 100% sure. I certainly hope not, but oh my God.
I think there were parts that it was supposed to be funny, like
Yeah.
the whole scene where they go into the bureaucracy and they're like, you have to go to this division
Yeah.
and you have to go to
Yeah.
that division, and eventually their robot helper has to bribe them out. Like, I think that they're supposed to be funny and there are pieces that are supposed to be humorous. I don't think some of the parts that I find most humorous were meant to be humorous.
I agree. I think you are probably correct.
I do think I Love Dogs was supposed to be a laugh line.
I hope so, because otherwise.
No, it has to be. It has to be. Because then Mila, what's her face? She like makes that like, oh my God, I am an idiot. Like, little face afterwards, like, I love dogs. What did I just say? And you're like, everything is so good. Everything is so good.
God, I'm laughing just remembering it.
Okay, I love that movie so much. And it's interesting to see that in Resurrection, as opposed to like the original Matrix isn't funny. Like, there just aren't funny parts. That's not what that movie is interested in doing. But in the new one, it is funny. It does have a sense of humor. It does have the ability to kind of like laugh at itself, because you have Yahya Abdul-Mateen like making little jokes as like new Morpheus and being like, having that little joy de vivre. And I'm like, I love that so much. Like, I love when people can laugh at it themselves. I love little jokes. And that did make me really like that movie a lot.
I enjoyed the fact that, like, in that movie, they all seem to be real happy to be there and having a really good time, which is not the case. I mean, I absolutely love the original Matrix. I was watching it again and I'm like, oh yes, I 100% saw understand why I was obsessed with this movie in 1999. I totally do. Like, even just some of the camera angles when, like, Neo's re like reflection is in Morpheus's like re super reflective glasses, and you're like, wow, that's a really cool shot. But no, it is not funny. It is not humorous. No one seems to be having a good time the entire movie. You know, even Hugo Weaving doesn't seem to be having a good time being completely evil. You know?
Well, the funny thing about The Matrix was I rewatched it, I think, the summer of 2020, possibly summer of 2021. I don't know. At some point during pandemic, time doesn't mean anything anymore. And I was really worried about whether or not it was going to hold up, because I haven't seen it since like, 1999, 2000 either. And when I think of movies that I really enjoyed and really cared about at the time, it's like The Matrix and Dogma. And I'm like, oh, I can never rewatch Dogma. That I know
No,
did not
that's
age well.
yeah.
It needs to stay in the past. And I wasn't sure whether The Matrix would work in 20 years later. And I was watching it. I'm like, no, this is still a very enjoyable, very good movie. Like, all the fight scenes are still extremely cool. Like, it's grim, but like, it's still a very captivating storyline and it still worked. And I was really pleased to find that out.
And yeah, you're still rooting for the characters in the same way, which is not true of many movies that may have been very cool back in the day, but are now problematic.
Yeah. Again, I can never rewatch Dogma. It stays in the past.
That's fair. Yes.
No. And one of the interesting things, though, watching the first one and watching Resurrections so close to each other, was the pieces that they recast, where they recast Morpheus and they recast Agent Smith. I was watching the first one and I was thinking to myself, I could talk myself into this pairing. I could talk myself into Neo Morpheus, like, definitely something that I could do. The underlying premise is very interesting. Like, there's a lot of emotional depth there. But Lawrence Fishburne is not necessarily giving me like I want to bang this dude. That's not the vibe he's giving me. Hugo Weaving, I could also talk myself into Neo Agent Smith. I could, like, I would, like, theoretically, again, yes. I'm like, I could see how you could work this scenario and get there. Hugo Weaving, also not giving me those vibes. When I watch the new one, I'm like, both Jonathan Groff and Yahya Abdul-Mateen are like, I want to bang this man. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you so much for giving this to me. Vibes are impeccable.
Neil Patrick Harris also. Yeah. Everyone wants to bang Neo. Come on.
Everyone wants to bang Neo. The part where, what's his face? The dude on the ship who's like, oh my God, I wasn't sure whether he would be working with me for 20 years later, but like the gray in the hair, the beard, it is. And I'm like, thank you, sir. Thank you for saying what we were all thinking. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
And I also appreciated that in that first movie, what that side character dude, whose name I'm totally blanking on, also said, he was like, everybody who shipped out with him died. And mm-hmm. you watch that first movie and you're like, oh, that's very correct. The only guy mm-hmm. who didn't die was that one gentleman who was still on the ship. And having that lampshaded really made me be like, okay, so that means in this first movie, either everyone will die or everyone will live. Like, you're not going to kill off just one person. That was what I understood when that line was said. So it was, in a way, almost relaxing, because I was like, we're headed for one of two extremes. And I'll just find out where it goes. And I did like that everyone lived. I'm like, me no, too. In 2021, I do want everybody to live.
Yeah. Yeah. They could have gone in super, super grim directions. Yeah. Like, I was not sure what was going to happen in that movie, which was the case of the original Matrix.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the refreshing nature. I was like, I'm almost sure this is going to be a happy ending, but I'm not 100% sure. And I appreciated that they went for the happier ending rather than for the kabonkers ending.
Yeah. And there was the part where Neo was talking to Bugs. And I also really appreciate that they were like, Bugs as in bunny, whereas in listening device, I'm like, all I want is to be taught to pronounce people's names. Thank you so much. But he's talking to her and he's like, so we're back where we started. Nothing I did mattered. And she's like, no, what you did mattered so much. We have this change where it's not us versus them. It's the machines. There are machines who are on our side. We have built this extra space, this new city that's not Zion, where we're, you know, able to grow strawberries and able to really live under a sky that looks like it's a real sky. And that to me was such an important moment, because it could have been this really grim, oh, we're back to square one. And instead they were like, no, you did make change. Like Trinity and Neo sacrificing themselves at the end of the third movie, which, to be clear, I have never seen. And I did appreciate that they gave us flashbacks in the new one, because I was like, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. Thank you for this flashback. But like, to say that, no, we choose hope in this movie. We choose to be hopeful. It was really nice for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I liked the new cast of characters. I had no idea. I don't watch previews or anything. I was like, is Lawrence Fishburne going to be back in this movie? Is Hugo Weaving going to be back in this movie? I thought they might. So when New Morpheus came, I was like, oh! And when Jonathan Groff showed up, I was like, oh my God. And it was great. The moments of surprise were as good for me as the, maybe it's because I don't watch previews, but the moments of surprise and the like, the deep sense of optimism in that movie was very different from the original Matrix, where everyone used, like, there was still that optimism, that hope, but everyone was like, oh, you know, Neo is this special dude, and he's like, nah, man. And the Oracle is like, nah, man, they're gonna think you're the special dude and they're gonna get themselves killed over it.
the sense of hope was really nice. I also think one of the ways that you can see that 20 years passed is that, and like, this is a stupid example, but I remember when the Lego animated movie came out and they were like, why wouldn't, and I've never seen the Lego animated movie. I've seen Lego Batman, which I will to the my death maintain is the best Batman movie. I mean this completely seriously. I think it's the best Batman movie, but I've never seen the original Lego movie. But I remember one of the criticisms was like, why is this dude who knows nothing the hero instead of like the really competent female character who like was his mentor? And looking at the original Matrix and then reinterpreting that, it's like, oh, why wasn't Trinity the chosen one? And then this movie was like, you know what, that's a solid point. Trinity is the chosen one moving forward. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah,
we've learned in 20 years, and that was nice.
Yes. No, I watched it. I watched it over in the New Year's, the sort of New Year's time, and I was like, oh, this is very pleasant and very appropriate to watch in a new year. I really liked that.
Yeah, it was just a nice movie to watch. I watched it twice and I was like very happy both times. And apparently there's a contingent of people who like really hate it and like
Oh, I'm sure.
and I was just like, no, it's nice. It's a nice movie. Like, okay, obviously no movie is going to speak to everyone, but in a way I felt like I was really the audience for that, for the new movie. And I'm like, yeah, this is the movie that I wanted to see. I wanted to see things that are more complicated. It isn't just the machines versus the humans. It isn't just, this grim, dark series.
I saw the second and third movie back in the theaters back in the day. I've never seen them again since. I have no desire to see them again since. But anyone who was a fan of the trilogy as a trilogy, I think, would probably not be too much of a fan of the new movie,
That's fair.
would be my suspicion. Yeah.
I remember watching the second one and being like, even as a 14-year-old, like, oh, that was bad. That was bad. So I didn't see the third one. I enjoyed that. I liked that Jada Pinkett Smith got to come back and be like the leader of her people, even though she's like this much older woman. Like she's still
Yeah.
around and still the leader.
I definitely had moments of she looks really familiar, and I'm pretty sure she was in the previous. Oh my God, it's been that long. She's supposed to. I was like, oh, I appreciate that. Because I remember her in her previous role as the like rebellious captain of the, I can't remember what her ship was, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it's nice. And she has this like very lovely, like, and it's one of those things where I was like, I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be a queer-coded, like romantic relationship with her scientist. And I was like, oh, that's lovely. I love
Yeah.
that we're more explicitly queer in 2021. We're more explicitly like women can be leaders and just doing a lot of really lovely work.
Yes. But yes, anyone who is expecting grimdark sci-fi drama would not have been happy with that
Yeah.
movie.
No,
Yes.
no.
It was definitely I appreciated it as a romance story. I love the fact that they're sitting there pining, like she's
Yes.
sitting there pining over her in the coffee shop, and she comes in and I'm like, oh my God, this is both so sad and so adorable.
Well, I love that what the analyst says is what powers this entire thing is the yearning and the love between these two people who are rotating around each other in a really compel, like in a way where they're compelled to like be in each other's orbit, but can't be together. And he's like, and that's what drives the whole thing. And I'm like, it's a romance. It's a romance. And I also thought it was interesting the way that they talk about motherhood, especially like having a family and especially being a mother, and how that's a very powerful force. And that's something that's really important to Trinity. But it's also a force that can be used to control her and something that like can be used to be like, no, don't choose the love of your life. Choose your children who aren't real, but it's not like she knows they're not real.
Right. It's almost the WandaVision dilemma, right? It is the WandaVision dilemma.
I have not seen WandaVision, so I will take
Oh,
your
there
word.
you go.
That's fine.
Okay. But
One day I'll watch
yes,
WandaVision.
it's a little bit grim, right? Because it's the idea of motherhood as something that's valued and ideal, but also motherhood as something that's false and a trap.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about that in the same way that Neo is going to therapy. To me,
I didn't see that coming. Did not see that. I was like,
Neither.
oh my God, yeah.
These are two very powerful forces. Like they're set up as being kind of equivalent to each other. And it was one of those things where I never got the feeling that the movie was trying to say, like, therapy is bad. Or is trying to say like having a family and being a mother is bad, but they were trying to say it's powerful and that power can be used in negative ways. Because I was like watching the movie and like listening to Neil Patrick Harris be like, okay, like what can you feel? Like what can you smell? How does that make you feel? And I'm like, oh yeah, like this is just fully therapy. Like these are the coping tools that you would give somebody who is having, these panic responses. And it's interesting to see how that's used against Neo to be like, no, this thing that you're seeing isn't real. Keep taking.
I think that's part of the whole interesting thing about it, right? Because like therapy is almost never portrayed as something that is in a negative light in most any movie, unless the therapist is, you know, Hannibal Lecter, which is an entirely different genre altogether.
The only time we've seen therapy in the movies we've watched was when Bucky was going to therapy with what's her face, who was a terrible therapist.
She was a terrible therapist, but therapy was not seen as something in that sense that was negative, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. She was a bad therapist. I do not disagree with you, but like everyone was like, oh yeah, no, this is fine. Yeah. This is not a problem. And I was like, this is a problem, but that's because of the bad therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. No. On the other hand, I was like, listen, if Keanu Reeves was actually hallucinating, I'd be like, no, this therapist doing a great job giving him tools to like confront that.
Yeah, exactly. Except he wasn't hallucinating.
Yes, he wasn't hallucinating. Oh my God. And it was interesting to try and figure out what was going on at the start of the movie when you have Bugs and Seek looking at basically the beginning of the first Matrix with Trinity and with the agents. And they're like, something is wrong. And you're like, what is going on? What is happening? What is, and then you get that like, 10 to 15 minutes later, you get that pullback to be like, okay, this is what's happening. This is like the layer up kind of inception. It's like, this is not the real world, but this is the layer up of where they were running this sub program.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought in the beginning, I thought it was plausible that the whole story was going to be about Bugs and that crew. And I was like, and that Keanu and Trinity would kind of make like little peeks into it. And I was like, you know what? I have a feeling that would piss off a lot of people, but I would have been okay with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were very charming. I also, again, appreciated that they were like, Seek, like Sequoia. And I was like, again, thank you for teaching me to pronounce your name. And also that's a great detail that someone would come out of Matrix and be devastated that the Sequoias don't exist anymore. I'm like,
yeah,
there are a lot of things where if you were like, oh, take me from late 20th, early 21st century and be like, okay, so many things don't exist anymore. I'd be like, I need to lay down and like cry about this for a long time.
Right. So, but they have strawberries.
They do have strawberries now. They're working on it. And I did think it was an interesting conflict for Nairobi versus Bugs to be like, what is our place now? Like the Matrix continues in some form. So what are we trying to do outside of it, like the balance between improving life for the people who are already out there and trying to free more people who are still trapped, and how do we strike the balance?
Right. Well, because that was one of the things I remember thinking about, and it was years after I watched the first Matrix, mm-hmm. where, you know, they pull Neo out and he has a really tough time adapting to the original world, and Morpheus is like, it's a rule that we don't pull out someone once they're past a certain age because they just don't do well.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people whose minds are just totally not ready to be mm-hmm. out and may never be ready to be out. And they phrase it there as then, well, so that means that if we have to kill them, it's just too bad in the first Matrix. But then the second one, you kind of get the idea of, okay, not everyone can be pulled out. Not everyone is going to be in the real world. There are people in the real world, but how do you balance those things?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting place to go forward if they decide to keep making more Matrix movies. Like if they were like, and apparently both Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss have both said like, I would come back for more. And I was like, I would watch another one of these movies. I don't know how to do the box office, so I don't know if they're going to, but like, I do think they've left themselves space to move forward.
Yeah, agree.
There's never going to be a second Jupiter Ascending because it did not great at the box office. And that is one of the great sadnesses of my life.
Oh, I don't know about that. But it's something, all right. It is one of those movies that I am glad I watched it. I'm glad I rewatched it, but I still think, holy crap, what were they thinking?
I love that movie. That is like just a pure shot of it. That's just, you were like, yeah, okay, great. Tell me more.
Yes, I want to marry you, but wait a second. Yes, you are the reincarnation of my mother. What about it? Ay-ay-ay-ay-ay.
What an insane movie. I have to say, if I were going to knit something inspired by one of these movies, I would probably draw on The Matrix rather than Jupiter Ascending, because Jupiter Ascending didn't have a lot of knits, but The Matrix in the real world is all about that knit, all about that like bulky sweater that's slightly unraveling, very iconic. You're right.
I didn't even think about that. Like their finger, like Tank is always wearing those fingerless gloves.
The real world loves knitting.
Yeah, yeah, because it's warm and they're flowing around in the middle of the sewers in a magnetic spaceship.
Oh my God. And it's so funny because it's one of the jokes that everyone started making when we went into pandemic was like, oh, we all thought in like the apocalypse we'd be running around in like slightly torn clothing with artful rips and like leather, and it's like actually in the apocalypse we all wore PJs.
yep. I was thinking The Matrix too, but what I was thinking of was you remember those illusion scarves that were really yes. popular in the I would knit one of those in black and neon green.
That would be so cool.
Because I love the aesthetic of the falling code. Yeah.
Well, Carrie Ann Moss had that dress for the premiere with that falling code from Versace. And you're like, that is perfect. That is such good tie-in of like this beautiful aesthetic along with the theme of the movie. And the aesthetic of all three movies is very strong.
Like, yes, absolutely. Yes. You may laugh at Jupiter Ascending, but their budget definitely went into costume and wow. Yeah.
That costume when Jupiter is getting married to what the second brother, the red tiara of flowers and the like very elaborate flowered dress, which somebody on Tumblr once was like, you know what this dress says? It has red right above her ovaries and cascading down her skirt. It says this person is a uterus haver and she can have children and she menstruates. And I was like, I love that. That's insane. And I love the interpretation again.
You are probably, yes. It's so funny because like the aesthetic for The Matrix is so different from that of Jupiter Ascending, but so on point.
Yeah. I mean, when you watch both the first Matrix and Jupiter Ascending, you watch it and you're like, oh, I can see how the same set of people made these two movies. Like it makes perfect sense that you know, these two sisters made The Matrix and then made, there were things in the middle obviously, but then made Jupiter Ascending. It's like the bananas of like what the hell is going on, and like the very strong aesthetics and like kind of hinting at this bigger world that you get these hints of but you don't explore as much. You can see how these two things came from the same person. And then you watch Matrix Resurrection and you watch Jupiter Ascending and you're like, oh, these are even closer. Like, even though only Lana worked on Resurrection and Lily apparently was not interested, you're like, oh, I can incredibly see that the same kind of driving force behind that.
Yeah. Same vision.
Same vision. And I did enjoy, it was like one of those things that was like, oh, you're being very cheeky, but I did enjoy that they had the whole like, we have to make a sequel to The Matrix because the WB is forcing us to in as a plot point within Matrix Resurrection. I'm like, yeah, very cheeky. And I do enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was one of those things I didn't notice until I was watching Matrix Resurrection for the second time, but like they're doing a lot of deja vu. Like they're repeating those people are repeating that same line, but in different contexts, wearing different clothing with slightly different emphasis. And the first time it didn't really click because like you're seeing it from Neo's point of view and like Neo is obviously like going through some stuff. But the second time I'm like, oh, the Matrix is iterating. He's like seeing this, and it's not just that his mental state is disturbed. It's that the Matrix around him is kind of rerunning that same scenario slightly differently.
Which is exactly what deja vu was in the original Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they had that cat. The cat came back.
The cat, except the cat was evil.
Well, I don't think it was evil. I think the cat was just owned by the analyst who was evil.
That's fair. That's fair.
The cat was morally neutral, as is the way with all cats, although like neutral chaos. I do think most cats firmly reside in the neutral chaos. And then they took the cat away with them.
Yes.
I also thought it was really a nice touch to both have her, Trinity's like name be Tiffany and for her to be, I hate this name.
Yes.
And for that wrongness to be what's finally like, oh, this is incorrect. This is not the life I mean to live.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. So good.
I did enjoy that. I would 100% watch that. Like, would I watch Jupiter Ascending again with company? Yes. Would I watch it again by myself? I'm not sure. Matrix Resurrection, I would definitely watch again by myself.
I watched it the first time through with my sister and her husband because we watched it on Christmas. And I was like, I want to watch this here because they have a much bigger TV than I do. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when we're watching the movie with non-knitters, you can't be like, can we turn the lights on so that I can see my knit? Oh. So I was like staring at my sock and being like, okay, am I doing that? Like, what am I, how many rows am I doing? Do I need to do more rows? And that was non-ideal knitting experience. But when I got to watch it by myself, I was just, I had the lights on. I was on the sole of the foot. I was just like, all right, let's go. And it was a really good combo.
Yeah, the Bennett sister's shawl is mostly garter and stockinette. And even still with that, it's edged with I-cord. And there were definitely times where I got so involved with the movies, I would then come back and be like, oh, I did not I-cord the edge. And I have to go drop it down. Which is silly when you're doing garter and stockinette for the rest. And yet, but I got very, very, very involved in the movies. So it was a good combination, but I really love those movies. Mm-hmm. So it turned out to be a difficult knitting experience just because I was so involved.
Fair. I will be interested, since you are our fight scene aficionado, what did you think of the fight scenes in Resurrection versus the original?
It's hard to make the comparison because the fight scenes in the original are so iconic in like movies, like Bullet Time and the whole like pause in midair to accentuate the amazingness of this kick that you're going to do. Those things didn't really exist that much in movie before The Matrix. Now they almost seem ordinary, but I remember like even this time I watched them and I was like, oh yeah, I remember when this was like something no one had ever seen before. And there was no way that Resurrection could match that. There was no way at all. I liked Resurrection as a whole movie, but it's hard for me to point out like an individual scene where I was like, oh yeah, this was a real badass fight scene, even though I did enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I didn't think the fight scenes were as good in Resurrection, but I mean, like you said, part of that is just like, it was so iconic, the first Matrix and those fight scenes. But I kind of watched it and I was just like, all right, I can, these are fine. Everything about this is competent. My mind is not blown.
Exactly. I felt that way too. And, you know what? I was okay with that because most of it was not about the coolness of the battle. Because in the first Matrix, the whole coolness of the battle had a point. Yeah. It was to show that these things that he can do are why he is the one, why he is special, or this is why they are capable of doing these things in the Matrix, because they're not actually in the Matrix anymore. So they're able to overcome their ability to think in this machine. In Resurrection, you got none of that. Yeah. So the fight scenes were there for entertainment, but they were not there to prove a point.
Yeah, 100%. One of the scenes that in the Matrix original and that I had forgotten was so iconic was watching the bullet casings fall down from the helicopter and being like, oh, wow, that's very cool.
Yep. The bullet scene, the casings falling from the helicopter and the casings falling when they're like ripping their way through the lobby and they're like just blasting through all of these guns. And then there's this slow rain of the bullet casings. And I was like, oh yeah.
And like I said, in that little metatextual thing, it's like, how do you measure up to that? And the answer is, for at least Resurrections, they were like, we're just not going to try. And it's like, you know what? I respect that. I respect that as a decision.
Me too. I respect that. And I really enjoyed what they did with us.
And also I enjoyed the callback to the Lawrence Fishburne, Keanu Reeves, I Know Kung Fu scene in the first one. Because I had forgotten how cool that Kung Fu scene was in that. Like, it was so cool. And then to have that callback where they don't have that same thing, but you have like Yahya Abdul-Mateen being like, here's my cocktail. Here's my like excellent costume. He had great costumes the entire movie.
He did.
Once he got out of his agent suit, he was just like, I love colors and I love wide lapels and I love being loud and being flamboyant. And I'm just like, I love that for you too. So that was,
and it was so the opposite of the original Morpheus, who was like stark black with the little clip-on glasses the entire time.
Yes, 100%. It was good to see how do you like recast those roles, and how do you then have these actors do the same character in a certain way, but like a very different take on that character.
The people who they picked to recast did a really good job of making the character theirs.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah. I'm biased because I happen to love Jonathan Groff, and I especially love him as a bad guy. But yes, I was pleased by the way they owned their characters.
Yeah. And I also really enjoyed how the characters from the real world, like the crew that they were running with, felt a lot more developed in the most recent Matrix. Because in the first one, you kind of get the understanding of the guy who's betraying them.
Mm-hmm. Cypher, yeah.
Yep. And then you've got the like little mouse guy who's like, he's supposed to be unpleasant at the time, but like with 20 years time distance, you're even more like, ugh, this kid. Like, I feel bad that you're dying, but like, ugh, everything that you are and choose to be is just bad. Whereas in the new one, you're like, oh, I like these people a lot more. Like the lady who's like, Trinity is important to me. Like she is my like hero, the way that the other people look up to Neo. She's like, I look up to Trinity. And have the guy who was like, we're neologists, we have a lot of questions. And I was just like, that is so funny. I'm like, I can't imagine this man being like, on whatever version of the internet they have, being like, so this is my theory about Neo and like why he did what he did. And I'm just like, I adore that there's apparently a whole community of people who are like,
and that would totally happen. It would totally happen.
Great. I love that. It was so much fun. And just like, it was just so fun. It was so good. It was so good.
It was well updated for the time.
Yes, 100%. And then they flew off into the distance together. They were holding hands, and I was like, oh, they made it work. Yes.
I know people have mixed feelings about the original Trinity Neo romance. I liked it back then. I liked it now. I am happy for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it worked, and I think I like it. The function of the romance in the first one is to have the romance prove that Neo is the one. Like, the romance is not the center. The romance is kind of the supporting arc to prove the chosen one narrative. In Resurrections, it's like the romance is the core. The romance is everything in this movie. And Trinity becomes the one, or one of the ones, because she has this faith and this, or she eventually puts her faith and trust into this relationship.
Yeah.
She like believes that they can fly. And so she can jump and she can fly in a way that like Neo is not able to. And that's why it's a romance movie.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Jupiter Ascending for me is definitely the much more an archetypal romance, for sure. It is the trashy romance novel embodied with the, you know, with the wounded soldier and the princess girl and the with a spectacular destiny. And it is a YA romance.
Love it. It's so good. So good.
But yes.
I've read, I think I'm probably at like 30 Ice Planet Barbarian books in the last month. Yeah. Those are the blue alien sex planet, correct? Yeah. I'm going through it. I'm really going through it about romance novels this month. And I was just like, yes, this is the content I wish to consume while I am incredibly going through it about romance novels.
You know what? I fully respect that. I read a lot of fanfic. It's all romance. Mm-hmm. And there is something that is extremely compelling about a well-presented mm-hmm. romance story.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Very satisfying.
Yes. Next month, we will be watching In the Heights, which I believe also has a romance, but I'm not sure. I have never actually, despite loving deeply everything I've ever seen that Lin-Manuel Miranda has done, I have never actually listened to In the Heights or seen it. I didn't. It was one of those times where it was like, can we go to theaters? is theater safe? And I was like, not 100% sure if I wanted to go to theater yet. So I did not see it on the big screen, but I heard great things about it on the big screen. And because I was hearing such great things about it being large, I did not watch it small. So I'm glad that we're going to sit down and actually watch it. And we'll know how, we'll see how like the, we think of the romance and we think of the singing. This is going to be our first musical since Newsies.
Oh, well, hopefully it will be just as satisfying.
Well, I mean, I suspect it will be. I've heard many good things about it. So next month in the Heights. Bye.
Bye.